Welcome to another episode of The Shift with Elena Agar. In this episode, I sit down with Jasmine Bland Hawthorne. She's a speaker, she is a leadership coach. She does a lot of work with organizations and just modern leaders to help them navigate the world of growth in whatever role they're in. But what's interesting is that prior to entering this world of coaching and leadership development, she actually spent 15 years in different corporate roles, different corporate kind of large companies, and she's had 9 promotions in those 15 years. So she really rose to the top pretty quickly. Part of it I have to attribute to her, she's an ex-athlete, and in terms of just her captivating like ability to just hustle, to take care of herself in the process. She's very determined, very inspirational, load of energy. You can definitely see it. Very assertive, strong personality. I mean, I really just had a massive good time speaking with her. She has this physical and mental well-being focus as well, which again, I think comes from her, you know, upbringing and the sports background and so on. So interesting conversation, you know, insightful, but also just, you know, a nice reflective conversation around careers and growth and success. And what does that look like? And how can we reach our top performance as people today? So enjoy it.
Jasmine, welcome to the Shift Podcast.
Thank you, Elena. Great to be here.
I am very excited to chat with you because I get through LinkedIn, I get introduced to some amazing people. And I'm so happy that I think it was Kamina that introduced us, if I'm not mistaken. And she is just such a connector. So shout out to Kamina for bringing us together. And we definitely have lots of synergies. And I think we're going to have a nice little healthy chat. But before we go into that, give my audience a little bit of a snapshot about your career story and how did you come about to doing what you're doing today?
Yeah, no, thank you. And definitely a big shout out to Kamina. She's the super connector of all connectors. But a little bit about my story. I started in corporate America 15, 16 years ago. That part's not special or unique, but the unique parts of my story are growing through the grit of getting my career going by having 9 promotions in 15 years through some iconic companies that we all know and love, from being everything from a recruiter to vice president of recruitment. So when I talk to people about struggles that they go through, I've literally lived them. And that has been my career path and career story, always looking at how do we bring great talent into organizations, how we market to great people, and get them interested in these big companies that they may not think fit them. And so outside of that, my career kind of morphed into this coaching consultant space and keynote speaking. And, you know, the big part of who I am is really making sure that people, specifically women, know how to lead well while leading themselves well. So kind of brings me here today.
I'm curious because my audience knows I have a background in higher education and I have this interest between the link between higher education and corporate. But what did you study in university?
So I started out as a psych major because I like the way we think. I like how the brain works. But I'm graduating with a pre-law degree. Again, I like to defend and support people, make sure that people are getting what they need, which fits my day job today.
Nice. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah. So you had and then you kind of ended up in the starting with recruiter and then into leadership roles. That's interesting. I always find, you know, there's always a unique kind of connection between what people studies and sometimes there's no connection. Sometimes it's super interesting. So I'm always curious to see what people studied. I have this theory I'm trying to work on. I'm like, you know, about higher education and corporate. So hence the question. But tell me a little bit more about, you know, you, first of all, 9 promotions in 15 years, which is really, really good. Did you plan it or was it strategic? You know how people say you should change every couple of years, you get the most salary, you grow faster, et cetera. Was it strategic or did it just kind of happen because you were a high performer potentially?
So I would say it was equal parts strategy, but equal parts like knowing that it wasn't going to just happen for me. Like I had to make it happen. So, you know, I didn't really have a game plan of like every 1.5 years, you know, that's kind of like coming out of college, you know, let me pivot every 2 years or less so I can stay fresh and ahead. Really for me, it's like once a goal is set and met, I get bored. And anyone who's probably an athlete feels the same way. You're like, what's the next challenge? So my brain is conditioned to figure out like, what's the next challenge for me? And so that just happened to be a new role, a new space, a new a business unit. And that's really where I thrived, is like taking experiences from the past and like leveraging it for the next role. But I will say there's a lot of, I won't say those 9 positions were easy to obtain by any means. I had to do things that were quote unquote, like outside of the playbook, to get those roles, and, you know, showing my performance, showing up to different opportunities, but really like putting myself out there in new ways that aren't standard, so I can get seen.
And do what sports did you play, first of all? Remind me.
Yeah, so I competed in volleyball all my life, all through college. Even though I'm a big basketball fan, I never played basketball.
You know what's interesting is that I love that you were like, it's that athlete kind of mindset, right? Like just being an athlete, you're like, I need the next challenge. I joke, and it's not really a joke, kind of sad at the same time, but I say most careers die at mid-level. And that's because it takes a different kind of game to go from mid-level to senior level. And I'm just curious, especially for people who are listening, like I don't know, attributes, what that you can kind of, you know, put your mind to in terms of what does it take to grow that fast, like, you know, kind of like that fast and that often, I guess, in a career? Because I feel like there's a lot that people can, they don't have to be an athlete to apply. But what would you say, like, are, I don't know, top 2-3 things that you think, you know, got you to that level?
Yeah, I'd say number one, most people, even myself, have this healthy fear of rejection. Right? Like it's human nature for us. Here's my psych background. It's human nature for us to want to protect ourselves and not put ourselves in position to get told no. Right. And to raise your hand, to go after new opportunities is putting yourself in the line of fire to be told no, no, you're not ready. No, you're not good enough. No, not yet. And for me, the sooner you can get through the no, you get information, you get detail as to why there was a no. Right. And then you go back to your wheelhouse and you work that thing. If they say, no, you're not ready because you have enough years, or you're not ready because you haven't, most people don't know you yet. We haven't socialized you to the organization, whatever the reason is, that gives you enough data points to go then do something about it. And I think most people take the no as very personal and shut down. I take the no as I need more detail so I can level up the next time. So I think that's one. The second piece to that really is, going from kind of that mid-career to that executive level is not a solo sport by any means of the imagination. So this thought of like, I was really good at my managerial job doesn't mean you're going to be an amazing director or amazing vice president. It's who can I be in conversation with? Who can I be in partnership with to help me not just bridge that gap, but sustain it when I get to that new role? And so partnerships, number two. And the third piece really is being okay living consistently in that lifelong learner mindset. I think the biggest downfall I see with leaders is this notion where the ego gets in the way, right? And ego is, got it. I'm not wrong. I'm not sorry. Like, I know what I know. And the reality is, the people who followed me all my career were ones who were like, Jazz will apologize if she messed up. She'll promote you. She'll highlight the heck out of you to the right people. My ego is set to the side. She's there. But my job is to make sure my people are good. And so in that, to make sure they're good, I have to showcase my humanity. And I think a lot of the great leaders that I admired and still follow today are so vulnerable with their humanity, but also very confident in what they're good at, right? And so you can be an amazing leader and still not be good at something. But your team wants to connect with you. So I think those are the biggest things. It's, you know, taking the time to be human with your folks. Don't go at it alone. Find some partners in that strategy. And then last but not least is really being okay with getting told no.
Yeah, well, you know, as you're talking about the rejection piece, I just always think of like the Gen Zs and the videos that are coming out. I can't help it, but I just pick on them sometimes. But the TikToks that are coming out when they're like, oh, life is too hard, and why do I have to work 9 to 5, and you know, and all these high expectations about what the real world. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, wait till you start getting rejected. Like, you're not even like, this is just regular life, you know. So any thoughts on, you know, my audience knows I'm very, you know, how I feel about Gen Zs and stuff like that. I'm not the most empathetic towards them. But I'm curious to your thoughts. Like, how, you know, do you feel like, do you feel like that's a challenge, that's going to be a challenge for a lot of young people? Because, you know, such a big majority of Gen Zs we know are just not as adapt to stressors today. Like, that's just the reality. I feel like they're just made slightly different than previous generations, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, I think, so here's the deal, how I feel about this. And just for full disclaimer, I'm an elder millennial, like the kids in the streets like to say.
Me too.
So I think there is something to be learned from each generation. And I think there's this, like, you know, full transparency too. My mom's side is from New Orleans. So we always talk about gumbo, and my analogies always go back to food a lot. A really good organization, a really good firm is like an amazing pot of gumbo. It needs a little bit of everything to make it come together. It's not just one piece. It's not just one generation that makes it tick, right? And so what I mean by that is, you know, are there some intricacies about each generation that were like, no, that's a little different, you know? But when I think about Gen Z, I think it's an opportunity for us who are different generations to lean in and go, what is the fruit of that generation? Like, what is the sweet thing that they're bringing that we don't have in mass? And at the same token, exchange what we do have in mass, right? And so a lot of that is us taking the time to say, like, here's why this is important. Here's why we at it this way. It doesn't mean that that's Bible for people out in the streets. It just means that, you know, there is an opportunity to exchange knowledge back and forth between the generations. And I think there's some truth behind what Gen Z has to say. It's just in making sure that it's going to land well, one, so that it's actually received, and two, like, can we do something with that information? I've always had multi-generational teams that I've led. And it's interesting to, what I found is when I create space for everyone to have a voice, people go, huh? And they'll pause just enough to go, okay, I hear what you're saying. Let me educate you as to why we're doing it this way. So anyway, that's my thoughts. I think that the TikTok videos are hilarious though.
I have two sisters that are Gen Zs, and then I have a Gen X brother, and I'm the elderly millennial. And so I like to pick on all generations, and I see it in my sisters as well. And I'm just like, and you're right. There is, you know, there is something to take away from each generation. Absolutely. But it is also interesting how they are transforming the way that we work because of, I mean, they're coming into the workforce and they just have certain demands. So if anything, what I take away from Gen Zs is they know what they want and they know what they're willing to do for work and what they're not willing to do for work. And I appreciate that. They're like, nope, just going to be remote.
Yeah.
You know, but to that point, I think there's something you mentioned that I think is super important. A lot of people don't pay enough attention to it, or, you know, put a strategy to it, which is the relationships in the workplace. And, you know, as you know, especially now that you're in that leadership kind of development space as well, talk to me a little bit more about, you know, somebody who's listening is like, okay, I know relationships are important, but I'm remote or I'm hybrid, or I, you know, I'm in a very hierarchical organization. Like, how do I break through to the top? Because you need to align yourself. Any tips on how do you align? Like, what do you recommend?
Yeah, I think first things first, it's going to feel uncomfortable. I think for most people, they're like, they hear the word networking or putting themselves out there, and they just automatically start overheating and sweating. Like, this is, it's like public speaking 101. So like, just go ahead and accept the fact that this is going to feel different, because quite literally most of us are rebuilding or re-engineering our DNA to do these new things. And so that's first. The second piece is, not everyone needs to know what you have planned or what you want to do next. I always say, like, who are the key influencers that can actually do something with the information you share? So people say, oh, I have friends at work. Okay, yeah, but can they actually help you get to the next level? Can they bridge gaps for you? Can they point out things in you that'll help you get to where you want to go? I'll give you a prime example. I remember I always talk about doing your self audit, right? Like, what are you good at? What do you want to be good at? And like, what's the space in between? And you find people, resources, and tools to help you cover that gap. And so sometimes, as simple as maybe you're in an organization and you have town hall meetings or some kind of monthly or bi-monthly meeting that's company-wide, there's always a different speaker, right? There's always someone in the business that's speaking about whatever topics at hand. And maybe you see something specific in them. You're like, oh my God, I love how they talked about this, or actually want to be on their team one day, but I don't know how to broker the conversation. Use that town hall as an example. Quick follow-up email. Hey, Elena, I love the way you talked about X, Y, and Z in that meeting. I would love to get 10 minutes with you and download a little bit further if you're open to it and share a little bit more about what I do. I don't know anybody who is going to push back on like, who is this and why do they want to talk to me? Most people, when you tell them they did a good job on something, even if they're the freaking CEO, are going to go, one, thanks for listening. Two, thanks for coming back, because it's lonely at the top. Yeah. And like, hey, executive assistant, can you get this person on my calendar? Like, that is the recipe. People always go, Jazz, I don't know how you did it. But that was my recipe for like, let me get in front of people. You asked about how do you do this virtually? Most of my career, I was virtual. I made it my business to be in people's faces all the time. And that was done through kind of this coffee chat culture of, I'm going to put my name in front of you. I want to reach out and give you kudos about what you did. But most people aren't going to do that. And so if you take the extra step to do what most people aren't, you're already ahead of the game.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I tend to, I've learned this over the years is that, like you said, sometimes we think that just because somebody is in a certain position that they don't want to hear feedback or everybody enjoys not only a compliment, but also a lot of people feel very lonely at the top and they don't always know what they're doing. So the fact that there's, you know, reinforcement, like, hey, like this was great. They're probably like, oh, thank you, because nobody tells me that. And it sounds, you know, so small and maybe, you know, you're thinking, why would a CEO need to hear that? But you'd be surprised. It goes back to that human aspect. They're all human at the end of the day, and you need to connect to them as human beings, not their titles. Sure, you should respect the title, but they're just a human being. So you should treat them as such. And I think that will make it a lot more comfortable to network with higher ups and you know, cross organizational as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would just add to that real quick. I think oftentimes people, and I used to do this too before the nine promotions, is we perform for our audience of one, which is like our solo boss that's right in front of us, right? And I always say, these people that are your boss's peers, your own peers, the next level up, this ecosystem of people should know you from your voice to them, not through other people often. And so as much as possible, it's like getting out in these different ways to showcase who you are, what you're capable of. And more importantly, like, how can you serve them? How can you be of support in their initiatives? So anyway, that's my cheat code if you're trying to get ahead.
Yeah, no, I like that. And because you're not always going to have your direct manager who's going to be necessarily, you know, a sponsor for you to say, or a mentor to you. Doesn't mean there's some ill intent there. Sometimes there is, sure. But a lot of times that they just, you know, sometimes not all leaders are coaches, not all leaders are mentors. So I think being able to kind of take a little bit more ownership of that growth, you know, across the organization in a sensitive way, I would imagine, right? Like, you don't want to piss your boss off jumping over him or her, you know? But I'm to that point, talk to me a little bit about, you know, coaching for leaders, because it is something this is what you're doing these days, and you have a very unique approach to how you do that. And I would imagine, again, being biased towards sports, that there's probably a lot that you bring in from your sports life into the way you coach leaders today.
Yeah. So I think the biggest secret sauce, and it's not really a secret, is my unique capability is connecting with folks one-on-one. Like, and that really starts with this simple question, and it's gonna sound like, okay, Jasmine, sure. But if you ever asked a five-year-old, what do you want? Five-year-olds can go rattle off a list of 10 things, right? They're like, I want this candy, I want this toy, I'm gonna go here, I wanna do this. You ask an adult or an executive or a leader, what do you want? And they will give you a list of things they need to get done. They'll give you of things that they're responsible for, but they never get to the root of what they want. And so I always start with the person in front of me. And in that, I can then just start to unpack, okay, how are you showing up? How is that showing up in your leadership? How is that showing up in how you cultivate relationships with your peers and your own boss? A lot of the work is sitting with the person and truly understanding who they are and what they want to do next. And oftentimes I find that most leaders, aren't doing what they want to do, or they're not showing up the way they want to show up because they're following a path or a system that was laid before them and they thought they needed to follow that. I think the best leaders I've ever had the opportunity of working for or with have truly brought kind of this corporate notion of being authentic to the workplace. Just means like be your freaking self. What does that look like? And how does that support the company's mission? I think so many people are afraid to just showcase who they are and be okay with that. And so that's my first step, is staying in that space with them. It's uncomfortable for them, but we're going to get there.
I'm curious, what do you think happens in our life that at some point we don't know how to answer the very simple question? Or maybe it's, you know, maybe it's not that simple of what do we want?
One, people stop asking us as adults, right? Who cares? They're like, I don't care what you want, just get it done, right? So we stop asking one another. I think the other piece to that is we are literally just walking a path that's already been paved, right? And so not sitting with ourselves to say, is this still what I want? Am I showing up the way I want to truly show up? And I think, you know, for better or for worse, post George Floyd, COVID times, that whole season in our lives gave a lot of us the reset and the pause needed to go, okay, if it all ends tomorrow, am I living the life I want to live today? Most of us had that like gut punch of like, nah. And like, okay, no problem. Now what does it take for me to start living the life or leading in the way I really want to lead? And I think a lot of the greats have done that and evolved their style, how they show up over time. But even if no one else asks you, ask yourself, I kind of do this quarterly audit. Am I showing up in the world the way I want to show up? Am I leading the way I want to be led? And then making those pivots and changes. So I think to your question, it's like, no, the questioning of who we are has stopped.
Yeah, it's sort of sad because it's one of those basics that we don't go back to. I'm super big on these things, which is why I love this podcast, because I talk to people a lot and these kind of questions pop up. And I really hope that my audience takes pause and spend some time actually answering those questions for themselves, which is why we have a kind of ritual at the end of each podcast when I ask you to share a question that people can ask themselves, which we'll get to later. But I do think that we don't ask ourselves enough questions. And not that we don't make time. And I think that, and you know, I'm curious what you think, but I think oftentimes we're almost afraid of what the answer might be, because we're afraid that, you know, what do I want? And then you say things that are not what you're doing right now. And then that means that you have to completely rearrange everything you're doing and how you're living your life. And that's scary. And most people don't want to do that because that opens up a, you know, Pandora's box. You're like, I don't want to answer those questions because I've delayed them for so many years that, you know, I don't want to know the answers because they're not aligned with how I am at all today.
So then it's the question of the pain of regret or the discomfort of learning something new or discovering your new self, right? And I don't think you can ask anyone who has lived a full life, you know, up into their 80s, 90s. My grandfather is still alive. He's 92. And when I ask him about things that he's done in his life, the only things that he often talks about are things he regrets not doing, right? And this man has lived a very full life. And so I would never want anyone to get to the end, not to sound morbid, but it's like, what are we doing? We get one shot at this opportunity. I know we're talking about careers and talking about growing as a leader, but you have one shot at this thing called life. And if it's not in alignment with who you truly are, like, what are we really doing? And it doesn't mean you take this drastic, like, right-hand turn to change everything tomorrow. But like, what are the steps to get there? What's the next logical step to get you to the space that feels truly aligned to who you're supposed to be? I will say the funny thing about how we're set up in the world is, you know, you can be doing a good job at something you hate because you get rewarded for it, right? There's that check, and then you get promoted, and then your 10 years go by and you're like, how did I end up here? And so I think it's so important, even if you are being rewarded for doing a great job, for delivering with excellence, what would life look like if you put that excellence in alignment with who you truly are, with your own value systems?
Yeah, it's very true. I wonder how much all of this, it's another kind of topic I think about a lot is, how much does our overall well-being, and I'm not talking about like, you know, sitting doing yoga, I'm talking like the actual physical health, allows us for that mental clarity? Because I just can't imagine, and my audience knows my health story, and you know, I'm happy to share it with you at some point, but I remember when I was not at my best health-wise, like physical health-wise, my mind wasn't right either. I didn't have space to think about these other questions. Like it was just, I don't know, I was in a different mind space. So I wonder how many people around the world, especially in countries like America right now in America, 70% of people are obese. Most people have some kind of, eventually go into burnout, diabetes, heart issues, all sorts of issues that a lot of them are related to the stationary lifestyle that we have in America, right? And the lack of quality foods that is accessible and affordable and things like that. And I just wonder, can you truly be at your best performance if the physical and the mental aspects of you are not taken care of? And I'm not talking about being a professional athlete or eating at Whole Foods every day. Obviously, it's not realistic, but I'm just saying, like, are there things that we could do differently, because I'm convinced it impacts how you think, how smart you are, how creative you are, and all those things. What do you
Yeah.
think?
I think that there is a million ways to over engineer how to have well-being. I do. But if we like strip it back to your point, the most simplest of things is asking yourself, did I move my body today? And moving your body can mean that, I don't care if you have a fancy walking tread at your desk or if you just took the stairs from the fourth floor to the first floor. Like check, did I move my body? Did I get some sunlight? And God bless everyone who is not in a sun state or country. But like, did you get some fresh air, if not sunlight? And then that third piece is the nutrition value or water. Those things aren't expensive, but they are costly when we don't do them. I mean, I very well feel that fog or like, the inability to make good decisions faster when I'm not doing those things. So the minute I feel like, dang, it took me 20 minutes to write this one stinking email, it's usually because I'm not on my game with these simple, basic well-being routines for myself, right? And so I think it's just, again, pausing long enough to ask the question, did I move? Did I drink something good today? Did I get some fresh air? And then those resets. And I always often my team would laugh at me because I would stop doing video one-on-ones and I said, I'm doing a walk and talk. So I'd be on the phone with them, but I'm walking the park or walking the neighborhood and have them write the notes because that's the only time for me to get a break, right? And so I think it's being creative too with how do you fit that in and not jamming it at the end of the day or trying to force it in at the beginning at 5 a.m. in the morning. But what does your lifestyle look like today and how can you weave in well-being at every step? As simple as, hey, I no longer do 1 hour or 30-minute meetings. They all end 5 minutes before. That 5-minute gap between each call is me refreshing water, me going get a fresh break outside, right? I think getting to a point where we learn how to keep our tank full instead of letting it get to E at the end of the day or the end of the week will help us start to get that clarity back.
I love the walk and talk. I think we are, especially in leadership positions, we're expected to, put on this, sit behind a desk kind of thing versus, like, and just be like, on camera and present or be in an office and so on. But I'm very much on board with the whole just it does, to do things differently. Let's just put it that way. I think there's a lot of focus on like, or well, if you're not in the office, if you're not behind your desk, if you're not in a specific format that the world of work has created, that you're not really, practicing leadership. But in fact, what you just described is actually probably making a lot of influence on your team members because you're prioritizing well-being, and it's very likely that they will also do the same. And it's like leading by example, right? Like actually having people see how you operate as a leader. That's how you influence others. Like it's not by telling them what to do, right? It's actually by doing the things that you maybe would like other people to do, and taking care of your well-being as an essential part of it. You've worked in a lot of different companies, obviously led a lot of different initiatives. You've built and scaled a global center of excellence, right? You've had a team that delivered over 800 hires across North America, APAC, and EMEA, right? So what are some things, I guess, that you can share in terms of how do you manage the diverse teams? Like, what has been most helpful to you? I'm sure it came with its own challenges. What are some of those? How did you solve them?
Yeah, I know I sound like a broken record when I talk about this, like, power of humanity, but at the core, if you just ask yourself, like, what do humans need? And we need to know that we belong wherever we're at, that we're respected, to some extent loved or appreciated for what we do, and that we have clear understanding of where we're going. If you can give, so I'm talking to all the leaders out there or up and coming leaders, if you can give your team that, they will ask my folks, they're like, they will run through walls for you with what do you need? How can we fix it? How can we drive to something better? And I think it's the caring aspect. I don't give a flippity darn about what we promise the board or whoever if I can't care about my people. If we don't get the people right, nothing else matters. And so it's knowing that when I say hello to you and pause and ask about your weekend, I'm not off to the next task. I'm sitting there waiting for your response. When I follow up with you at a one-on-one, I want to know how your grandma's cat was doing. So you always talk about your grandma's cat, right? And then we get down to the business at hand. I think people have gotten away from that. And so for me, what it's really been helpful is anyone who's ever been on my team knows that I know them. I know what they want to share with me, and I hold that dear so I can see how they tick. How to drive each person individually towards delivering on what we did commit to in the business. The other piece of that is it's not just good for me to know this, but then I start to help amplify across the team. Everyone has some level of greatness that they're uniquely qualified to do, whether it's their experience through their generation, whether it's experience through other companies they brought in. And it's my job to create this space where I am letting each one of us know, like, that person's darn good at this. This person's darn good at that. And we start to respect that on the team, right? Like, no one's trying to play multiple positions. Play your role, do it darn well, because we're counting on you because she's doing this, right? And I think that transparency creates trust. And then that trust creates the opportunity for us to hit the bigger goal because no one's looking over in your lane going, you got it? No, I trust that you got it because you told me you're good at that. And if you don't raise your hand, I don't know you don't got it. Right. And so as a leader, I've done the same thing. I remember one of my most transformative meetings I had with my direct reports across the globe. I sat down with them virtually like this and I said, so this call is about us being very vulnerable. And everyone's like, oh God, this is awkward. And you rightfully so, everyone's different generation, different ethnicities, different cultural nuances. So I had folks from different parts of the world. But keeping that in mind, I'm very much who I am. Born in South Central LA, raised in Arizona, I'm going to showcase who I am as well. And so what I shared with them was, I want to share with you guys the things that I am not that great with and why I'm going to lean on you to be great at these things because it just takes me a little bit longer. And then I'm going to tell you guys the things I'm darn good at. And like how I've got your back with the things I'm darn good at. So like, don't second guess that I've got you here. And the only reason why I'm in this seat as your leader is because I'm the one that's going to help cultivate you and make sure you guys get put onto the next level. That's it. Like, so me showcasing my humanity to them in that way made them run through walls with all kinds of initiatives that we hadn't achieved before. Then likewise, they all went around the circle. I really suck at spreadsheets, but I'm really good at storytelling. Fantastic. But it gave us all an opportunity to like be comfortable with like not being perfect and being darn good at the strengths that we do have. I think that's really up to the leader to cultivate that safe space.
What point did you decide or realize, or maybe something happened to where you're like, I think I just want to go independent?
So it's a good question. I ran both simultaneously for a long time. So I was in my executive role and coaching folks internally and externally for a long time. And then people will say like God said, and everyone's like, okay, so God's talking to you too. Like so I had a God said moment, and it's very clear that he said there's more people to be served outside the walls of X corporation. And as an athlete, I take any challenge personally. And I was like, okay, here we go. And so, it took a few whispers because I like the corporate space, but that challenge from God was really about there's more people to be served. And so as soon as I opened myself up to coaching and speaking to others outside of my one corporation, it's kind of been sky's the limit from there of serving and communicating with executives who, at the end of the day, we all have the same problems. We just don't know how to talk about it or have safe spaces to go to, right? Mm-hmm. We can be vulnerable and actually have a coach who has been there, done that. So I love the space I'm in.
That's amazing. Yeah, I always say everybody needs three people in their life. A mentor, a coach, and a therapist throughout your life. for different reasons, okay? Nobody gets up there alone, and it's all good and healthy. We all need a soundboard.
So there's that.
Say what?
I said, or stay there alone, right? Like you need that. Yeah,
no, absolutely. So before I ask you my last question, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you? They want to just follow you. Where do you hang out at the most?
Yeah. So in terms of social, I'm definitely on LinkedIn for all your business needs. So Jasmine Bland Hawthorne, MBA, you can find me there. Instagram, I'm pretty active. So if you are more of a visual person, my IG is at The Valley Pearl. You can also find me on www.thevalleypearl.com or jasminehawthorne.com.
I'll make sure to share all of that in the show notes for those that are listening and maybe driving and don't have access to enter it right now. Last question I ask all of my guests is, what is one question you wish people would ask themselves more often?
So I'm going to start with the one that I didn't know this question was coming up, but what do I want now? I think that and the reason for that question is when we're little, someone will ask you, well, who do you want to be? And we quickly go, firefighter, a teacher, a lawyer. And like, that's your thing. But I think as we learn and gain experience and understanding and we learn ourselves over the years, it's a good pulse check to say, what do I want now? Because what you wanted 5 years ago may not be how you want to show up today. And that's okay. And so that what do you want now question is pivotal, and I use it often.
I love that. What do you want now? Hope everybody takes this away and asks themselves this evening, spend some time. I definitely will. It's a good question. It's amazing how powerful these simple questions are, that they're not so simple. And it's a nice reminder and realignment of what is it, why you're doing what you're doing. So there's so much to that question to unpack, for sure. I love it. Well, Jasmine, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you, Elena. Thank you, everyone listening, and hope you found some good gems in today's session.